You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman. We're letting Anna Haster take this weekend off as we're all getting rested up, because starting this Thursday is the Iowa State Fair in Des Moines, running the 8th through the 18th. And one of the big events that we're going to be a part of here during the fair is the Governor's Charity Steer Auction. We'll be involved. We'll be joining forces with Delaney Howell from Ag News Daily, and we're going to be previewing the celebrities and the kids that are going to be showing these cattle during the Governor's Steer Show, and we'll also be doing some coverage online of the parade as well as these interviews beforehand. It's a great charity, and we'll be joined right now by Katie Olthoff of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association to tell us about this Governor's Charity Steer Show.
The State Fair coming up, big event coming up on that first Saturday, and that is the Governor's Charity Steer Auction and the show. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there for people that maybe aren't quite familiar with what happened.
Sure. This is the 37th annual Governor's Charity Steer Show. It was started by Governor Branstad in one of his first terms, and he designated the Ronald McDonald House Charities as the beneficiary of this steer show. So the Ronald McDonald House Charities provide a home away from home for families of seriously ill children. There's a house in Sioux City, Iowa City, and Des Moines, and we support all three of them. And over the years, we've become their largest fundraiser throughout the year. Almost $300,000 is what we ended up donating last year. So something that we're really proud of, and a way for the beef industry to come together and give back and show what can happen when such an amazing group of people join forces for a good cause. So the steer show happens at 4 o'clock on that first Saturday. We'll have 25 steers from around the state. Youth that raise those steers will be showing alongside a celebrity showman. So we get celebrities from the media, from political realms. We also have a few celebrities who have benefited from the Ronald McDonald House Charities. We like to get them back in the ring and do something fun for them too. So they will go, they'll do the show in the Livestock Pavilion at 4 p.m. Then there will be an auction afterwards. That's where we raise the funds. So we will still see steers going for several thousands of dollars. And we have to always say a huge thank you to our agribusiness partners, those companies, as well as cattle operations and other groups across the state that are supporting us in the steer sales and helping out the Ronald McDonald House that way. We have put together a new website. It is iowagovernorscharitysteershow.com. You can also go to the Facebook page and find a link there. We would love to have Iowans donate through that page. If you can't make it to the show, but you want to support the Ronald McDonald House Charities, or maybe you have personally used Ronald McDonald House and you want to give back, please go to that iowagovernorscharitysteershow.com and put your donation in there. We're also really excited that we have some great media partners this year to help us promote the event. So Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, you guys will be there doing some Facebook Lives and radio broadcasts the day of the show, as well as Delaney Howell with Ag News Daily will be helping us out too. So watch our Governor's Charity Steer Show Facebook page for more information about that.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I mean, last year was my first time attending the event, my first year in Iowa, and it's definitely a big show, a big event, and there's a lot of effort put into it. And it's going to be interesting to go behind the scenes a little bit and see the effort putting into getting those cattle ready and getting the celebrities ready and acclimated for working with those animals.
Yeah, it's really kind of an interesting event because the cattle producers involved treat it like a regular show. You know, there will be fitting going on. They'll get really competitive about that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's all about the charity and the good that the beef industry can do. The day before the show, we actually take all the youth involved and we'll meet the governor at the Des Moines Ronald McDonald House to do some volunteering and have lunch with some of the families that are staying there. And so, again, it gives them, everybody involved, a great opportunity to give back. And even as we're talking about it, it gives me goosebumps because it's such an amazing event.
And, you know, the opportunity, like you said, to raise money for these organizations, you know, they really thrive on the donations that they get. And, you know, this chance for everybody to be a part of it. And it's also a little bit of some bragging rights among some of the celebrities as well, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. They get a little competitive about how much money that they can raise through their particular steer. There's a People's Choice Awards, and so they'll try to fill the stands with everybody in matching T-shirts, making a lot of noise and that kind of thing. It's fun, and at the end of the day, you're exhausted, you're hot, you're sweaty. I mean, it is the state fair, right? But at the end of the day, there's no better feeling than knowing that we have helped out thousands of families who have a child that is dealing with a serious medical issue, given them just a little bit of comfort during that time with a place to stay that's free of charge for them so they can be right there by their child in times of need.
All right, so we definitely want to again remind people they can donate online. We'll have Katie remind us of the website in just a moment. Also, if you're at the fair on Saturday, come down, you know, be a part of the event. It's a great time. It's a great cause that we're raising money for. And again, if you have to watch on Facebook, of course, it'll be through our Facebook pages. And also, there'll be places you can donate there as well. Katie, let's remind the people again the website where you can donate online.
Sure. IowaGovernorsCharitySteerShow.com.
All right, so make sure everybody gets pointed in that direction. Katie, thank you very much for taking the time to tell us about this big event.
Yeah, thanks, Dustin, and thanks a lot to Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network for helping us promote this event and helping support the charities that way.
So make sure to follow along next Friday and Saturday. Friday, Anna Hastert will be at the Ronald McDonald House talking to some of these kids. And it will be Saturday right on Facebook at Iowa Ag Radio. You can search us out there and find us. You can see the coverage of the pre-show activities as well as the parade of steers going down to the pavilion. And you also find links on those posts and those live feeds to donate to the help support the Ronald McDonald House through their biggest charity they have in the state during the year. And that is the Governor's Charity Steer Show. We'll be back on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and Weekend Ag Matters right after the break.
Farming has gotten so complex, you need another you just to keep up with it all. You'll come close when you work with your FS Crop Specialist. They know your growing conditions and your land, working for you season to season, helping fine-tune decisions to ensure a healthy ROI. And they're constantly in training to learn about the latest in seed selection, crop protection, and nutrient management. Plus, they're achieving certification standards that exceed the industry. Contact your local FS Crop Specialist to learn more. FS, bringing you what's next.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. It's been almost a year since Andrew Wheeler came as the acting administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency to the Iowa State Fair and assured our farmers and reporters and also people of the ag industry that he was going to reverse the trend that former Administrator Scott Pruitt had taken us down with the RFS. And here we are a year later, and we had a comment period at Ypsilanti, Michigan over those last week in which there are ag groups and farmers and producers who are worried that it's going to be the same old song. I sat down with Jeff Cooper, president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, and we talked a little bit about what's happened in these past few months. It has been an interesting past couple of weeks, especially in regards to the Environmental Protection Agency and small refinery waivers and speculation on that. Right now, can you kind of walk us through where we're at the moment?
Sure. Well, EPA is currently reviewing 38 petitions for small refiner exemptions from the 2018 renewable fuel standards. We saw the previous administrator of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, vastly expand the number of exemptions that the agency was giving to refineries and basically letting them out of their legal obligations to blend renewable fuels like ethanol under the RFS. And so everyone is now waiting and watching to see how the new administrator, Andrew Wheeler, is going to handle these exemption requests that are currently before him. So there's been a lot of attention, a lot of focus on EPA, and you know, we're expecting some decisions soon on those exemption requests. We are certainly hopeful that EPA will deny most or all of those exemption requests. We think they are completely unwarranted. We think there's really no evidence that these refineries are suffering any kind of economic harm under the program, which is really the criteria that they need to demonstrate in order to secure an exemption. So we think this program has been abused by EPA. We think these exemptions have been handed out to refiners that have shown no need for these exemptions. And so we're hopeful that the new administrator is going to put an end to that practice. But some things that have happened in the last few weeks give us a little bit of concern and reason for pause. And so we have kind of upped our efforts, I guess, to advocate for denial of these petitions, or at least a much more judicious and responsible approach to them.
You know, you mentioned the events of the past few weeks. I would say one of those is the RVOs that came out at the beginning of the month. You know, we were hoping and we knew there was a court mandate to reallocate the billions of gallons that were lost due to these waivers under former Administrator Pruitt, and we were hopeful that when those numbers came out that it was going to reflect that, and it shows that none of that was even taken into account.
Well, that's right. EPA just a few weeks ago proposed its 2020 RFS levels, and on paper they show a slight increase in the requirements for biofuel blending in 2020, but they're not worth the paper they're written on. Those numbers and requirements are meaningless, and they aren't really requirements because we know EPA is going to continue to give out these exemptions, and so the numbers that we see on paper aren't real. They are reduced and eroded by the small refiner exemptions that are being handed out. We were hopeful that EPA, in this latest proposal, was going to say, hey, we've heard you. We understand that in order to comply with the law, we need to be reallocating any exemptions that we're handing out. So, fine. If EPA wants to give exemptions to certain refiners, there is a provision of the statute that allows them to do that if certain criteria are met, but they should be reallocating any of those exempted volumes and putting them on top of the requirements for non-exempt parties, the larger refining companies. EPA's proposal does not do that. They don't propose to do that. They didn't send any signal that they intend to do that. And as you mentioned, they also just flatly ignored a court order from 2017 directing them in very plain language to restore 500 million gallons of lost demand from 2016 that was illegally waived. So this proposal was not at all good for the industry, very concerning. In fact, as we speak, there's a hearing in Michigan on this proposed rule. RFA has someone there testifying, and there are many others from the biofuel community. They're raising concerns with EPA directly as well, and we're hopeful that EPA hears those concerns, and when they put out a final rule in November, they correct some of these issues. But again, the signs that we're seeing are quite concerning.
You know, and talking about concerning, I mean, obviously, as a head of the EPA, you're going to see the administrator going to different sources of energy and things like that. And he's visiting visiting an oil refinery in Pennsylvania earlier this week that is owned by Delta Airlines. And, you know, one of those that has benefited from those waivers, but, is by no means a small refinery.
Well, that's right, and that's another. When I mentioned a couple of concerning things that have happened in the last few weeks, that's one of them. Mr. Wheeler was at Monroe Energy, a refinery owned by Delta, on Monday of this week, touring that facility, and we know he got an earful from the management of that company about the renewable fuel standard, and we know he heard about small refiner exemptions, and even though that refinery is not a small refinery, it processes about 200,000 barrels of crude oil per day, so it's fairly large, it still would benefit from these exemptions because the effect of these small refiner exemptions is it craters the prices for compliance credits, the RIN credits under the RFS, and those credits play a very key role in creating an economic incentive for higher-level blends like E15 and E85. So certainly Delta and the Monroe Energy folks, we're gathering to give Administrator Wheeler the message that they want him to continue this practice of handing out these exemptions like trick-or-treat candy. We responded to Mr. Wheeler's visit to the refinery with an invitation of our own, asking him to come visit an ethanol plant where he could hear directly from workers in our industry and the farmers who supply our industry and support our industry about the impacts of EPA's decisions on us. And we're hopeful that he will accept that invitation.
Yeah, he was in Southwest Iowa Renewable Energy, you know, last month when President Trump came, or back in June when President Trump came to, you know, celebrate the year-round E15 rule. But he didn't stick around too long there, and you know, and it kind of makes you wonder where things are going.
Well, that's right, and I was at that event as well, and Administrator Wheeler did kind of slip in and slip out of that event, and unfortunately, did not take part in a tour of the facility. We were able to show the president around that ethanol plant, and he took a very personal interest in the stories and comments he was hearing from workers at that ethanol plant, as well as the farmers that he was talking to. And the message was conveyed directly to the president that day that these small refiner exemptions are hurting rural America, and they're hurting our industry and destroying demand for our products. So the president heard that message directly from, you know, real people who were impacted by these decisions, but the administrator unfortunately did not, which is another reason for our invitation. We think he would benefit from that sort of, you know, the same sort of discussion that that his boss had.
You know, and he was in Iowa last year at the state fair while he was acting administrator, you know, and he told the press there alongside the Governor Reynolds at the time, saying that, you know, he realizes what's happening, he heard us, and he was going to do what he could to rectify the situation. And, you know, it seems like that situation isn't getting rectified. In fact, he went so far as to, or may not be rectified, I should say, you know, he went so far as to say they follow the recommendations of the Department of Energy, and the Department of Energy said, hey, hang on a second, you aren't following our recommendations at all.
Well, that's right. You know, both Administrator Wheeler and the former Administrator Pruitt, you know, have claimed that hey, our hands are tied, and we have to follow the recommendations of the Department of Energy on these small refiner exemptions, and certainly the DOE has a role in this, a role that was authorized by Congress. DOE is supposed to analyze the, you know, financial information of these refineries who are asking for exemptions, and issue a recommendation or you know, a sort of score, and then pass that over to EPA. And you know, we found out recently, in a letter from Secretary Perry, the Secretary of Energy, to Senator Grassley, that EPA in many cases has disregarded or ignored the recommendations from the Department of Energy. And in some cases, you know, DOE recommended against giving exemptions to certain small refineries, and EPA gave those exemptions anyway. So it just doesn't add up. I think what we're hearing from EPA is not consistent with what we've been told and what we're learning from the Department of Energy and others.
So as we wrap up today, Jeff, what kind of message are you sending to President Trump and trying to help him? You know, he was supportive of getting E15 year-round. He's been seeming to be supportive of biofuels in general. What kind of message are you guys sending to him on this situation?
Well, we think one of the primary reasons that the 38 pending petitions haven't already been decided is because President Trump came to Iowa in June and heard directly from farmers and ethanol producers about the seriousness of this issue. And it was reported that, you know, a week later he went back to D.C. and directed EPA and USDA to get together and sort of figure out a way forward on the exemptions that is not going to harm farmers and rural America. So, you know, if we can get the president to continue to take a personal interest in this issue, just as he did with E15, we think we'll come out of this okay. But as long as there continues to be a disconnect between what, you know, the president's vision and the president's commitments and what EPA is doing across, you know, across the street at the agency level, we're going to have problems. So, you know, our goal is just to keep awareness up around this issue, keep the heat on this issue. You know, our friends in Congress have been extremely helpful in raising awareness and concern and questions around this exemption process as well, and we hope that continues. We hope to put this issue behind us and you know, get the RFS back on track. And, you know, Congress, when Congress said 15 billion gallons of conventional biofuels, that's what they meant. They didn't mean 15 billion minus however many gallons you want to exempt from small refineries. So that's our goal, that's our intent, and we're going to keep working on it.
All right, well, Jeff, I thank you very much for taking the time to visit with us today.
Thank you, Dustin.
That again was Jeff Cooper of the Renewable Fuels Association here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll be back with Ken Root to wrap it up right after these messages.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Ken Root coming in right now to talk to us this week about dogs. Of course, he's not going to talk about those loving companions who help carry out tasks that we can't, but he's going to ask you, does your pet look like you? Get ready to hear about how he says it used to be and how he thinks it should be today.
Oh, the promise of America, where we can enjoy life, liberty, and the pursuit to feed our pets to the point they pop. It is a remarkable progression that has moved from tribal subsistence to frontier civilization to urban dwelling with our pets along for the ride. What a great statement to be able to say we are killing our animals with kindness. A recent report on the health of pets in the United States finds that half are overweight and 20% are obese. Many of those are cats, but I don't like cats, so I just want to talk about dogs. They are the ultimate companion animal, and easily transformed into specialized hunters, protectors, and comforters of humankind. Not bad for being 98% wolf. The entire range of the cycle has revealed itself in my lifetime. When I was quite young, I remember my father bringing home a puppy in his pocket. He came in from a day's work wearing loose overalls and carrying an empty lunch pail. His grin was more than normal, so I darted over to see a small, whimpering puppy emerging from his pocket. It was black and white, a mutt like us, but he was cute and cuddly, so I played with him until he was taken away and put in a box with a blanket. He got warm milk that evening, and Dad promptly forgot about him and turned back to the cares of the world. The pup that I named Elmer soon moved outside and had to compete with the other dog that hung around the door waiting for scraps to be thrown out. He grew a good frame, but he was thin. We didn't buy any dog food at that time. There was no money for such a luxury. In the months ahead, Elmer became more protein-deprived until I heard Mom tell Dad she saw him with feathers in his mouth. He had developed a taste for chicken, and that was our food. Dad and Elmer went hunting that evening, and I never saw Elmer again. Now we come to the modern day in America. Pets of all kind are abundant, with a growing market for exotic animals and well-bred canines. When we bring these creatures into our homes, it's like we have a perennial child. The government may tell us how to feed our children, but no one except a veterinarian informs us how to feed our dogs. I see people who literally love their animals to death. How did animals get this way? Perhaps you should write down what you feed a dog each day. Review the calorie count with a veterinarian's chart for normal intake. If your dog gets a bowl of dog food twice a day, plus snacks, and especially cooked egg breakfast, lunch, or dinner, the dog's problem is looking at you in the mirror. Why do people overfeed pets? It's not a simple answer and revolves around displaced affection and human self-satisfaction at the expense of another. A dog enables us to do this as he learns how to obtain food very quickly and can put on quite an entertaining show to get it. Dogs always appreciate what you do for them, as opposed to members of our own species. I now see a lot of people who use their golf carts and cars to take their dogs for a ride. Fluffy just sits there with his nose in the slipstream, enjoying the olfactory buffet. Perhaps it might be better to walk the dog or let him run alongside the cart on a leash. There's been so much progress, from millennia of lean, finely tuned specimens of man and beast to sedentary lifestyles with many hours of inactivity. Man and companion can now share the same self-inflicted diseases throughout life. I think that makes the bond even more special. Am I holier than thou? Not at all. My last dog was a pug named Rocky. He was supposed to weigh about 12 pounds. He weighed 30. Rocky loved to eat and had a comic routine that never got old. If there were two dogs in the room, he would eat his food at warp speed and then run to the other bowl and see if any was left. A little ball with one nugget of dog food inside would entertain him for an hour as he tried to get it out. Rocky was very active for his first 6 years. Then he slowed down in movement, but not in appetite. A few years later, he developed diabetes. But the veterinarian set us up on a regimen of 2 shots of insulin per day that we administered and then gave him a piece of cheese. He could live for several years, the vet said, and sent us home with insulin, syringes, and instructions on how to buy them cheap at Walmart. Rocky lived to be 14 years old. He went blind in his last couple of years of life. He was loved by us, and we were loved by him. There was no guilt in treating him as we did. For Weekend Ag Matters, I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thanks, Ken, and that's it for this edition of Weekend Ag Matters here from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You can catch replays of this show and all of our content on our website at iowaagnet.com. Look forward to seeing you out at the Iowa State Fair, getting ready to kick off this Thursday the 8th. We'll be out there all the days at the fair, so make sure you come on out. We'll be also covering the Governor's Charity Steer Auction on Saturday, covering the pre-show setups and the parade as it makes its way down towards the pavilion. So make sure you're watching for that on our Facebook page. We'll help raise funds for the Ronald McDonald House as well. For Anna Hastert, Ken Root, and myself at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network Studios in Des Moines, we wish you a great week ahead, and we'll see you out at the Iowa State Fair and next week on Weekend Ag Matters.